You're listening to the Music Manumit Podcast for December 1st, 2010. Learn more at musicmanumit.com. Hi, and welcome to another Music Manumit. I'm Tom, and with me is Doug. Hello, Doug.
Hey, hey.
How are you doing?
Doing all right.
I am actually, as of midnight tonight, it is my birthday.
Yeah, I saw that thanks to Skype. So, happy birthday.
Oh, did Skype show you that?
Yeah, Skype is like, dude.
I forgot it did that.
Yeah.
Oh, well, then there you go. So we're actually doing a right before my birthday, which lands on a Monday, which sucks. That's lame. I even have my my 2-year review tomorrow, which is on my birthday, because it got moved. So that's weird. So hopefully it will go good.
Yeah. You know? You just need to go in and say, look, it's my birthday. Yeah. Anyway, let's get this show on the road. So right on. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. I put a little thing in here because you were saying that you wanted to start doing a section where it helps artists or some sort of like how, maybe not how to. Well, it's your idea, so maybe you can explain.
Sometimes it'll be how to. Sometimes it's just going to be artist experiences, just anything. I just would like to have a segment where we kind of stay on the task of like, okay, we talk about Creative Commons music, but like how are the ways people can use it? I mean, we kind of do that, but I would like to have like a specific one where I'll just kind of go, hey, this is a cool thing that artists should do or should know about.
Yeah.
Or use. So you were saying that we should talk about our song picks. Do you think we should lead off the show doing such a thing?
I put it first in the show notes, so why not?
We could do that. So why don't we, even though I like to alternate the whose songs go first thing.
Yeah, you
and that's
been
why
doing
this week.
That.
I've been trying to. I forget.
Yeah, you've been putting mine first, which is I was bemused when I was like, oh, Tom decided to put his first. But I was just like, whatever, I don't care.
Right, yeah, no, I'm trying to do it alternate, where like 1 week it's mine first and yours first, but yeah, I can never remember what I did the week before. I mean, I suppose I could go look, but I'm already putting the thing together sometimes, so I don't even bother, because when you get like four, you know, songs into it, you don't really want to grab everything and start shifting them over.
Yeah, I did that when I did the one music show, I guess last week. I started just sort of throwing things in there, and then it was just a pain syncing them up,
mm-hmm.
you know, like starting at the beginning and going through is the definitely the way to do it.
Yeah. I always go one by one. So how did that go for you? I forgot to ask you, your first actual doing the audio for a music show.
It was a pain, at first. So, God, I can't remember what the sort of epiphany moment was.
Did it take you?
I was trying to like import the songs.
Mm-hmm.
I think you just have to like drag them in. I don't remember what I was doing, but
you can import them. That's what I usually do.
Well, what it was doing was like starting a new project each time.
Oh, are you sure you weren't clicking on open instead of import?
I'm pretty sure, but it doesn't really matter because I figured it out.
Yeah,
but
how long did it take you to figure out how to switch around the toolbar? That you had the different things you could do, like there's the drag cursor and then there's the edit cursor and
that's what was the problem is
okay.
that I didn't have the drag thing or God, I don't remember. Well, I made that little outro
mm-hmm.
thing, and so I played with that for a while, and maybe that's what I had. What was frustrating
mm-hmm.
is because I think it's normally on like the drag. Is that right?
No, usually it's on the edit tool,
okay.
Which is just like the regular. It looks like a you're gonna write text cursor.
Okay, yeah.
And the drag is the sideways arrows. But there
that
was one thing.
That must have been what it was. Is that I needed to figure out to get it to the drag when I got to actually editing the show.
I should have told you though. There's out of all those tools, there's one that's just a big like asterisk.
Yeah.
And that turns them all on. So basically, when you hover over different areas, like the sides of the audio you import become a handle. And you can move them over.
Well,
so you,
cool.
Yeah. So you're able to use them all at once. I was going to tell you about that, but then you actually sent me a message back going, "I finally figure out how to drag it" or something like that. And
yeah.
I was like, "Oh, then I don't need to tell them because it's pretty much the only other tool you got to use."
Right. Right. Yeah. And no, I think I remember the editing of the little outro being pretty easy. I spent some time trying to figure out if I wanted it to like be over music and stuff like that. And I don't remember what I decided upon, but I spent just a little bit of time with that. I think actually I started to record an intro as well. And then I was just like, you know what, screw it.
When I had that one online that we have, that's just like a regular boilerplate one.
Yeah, and I was going to mention that I was doing it for the first time and just say, you know, like, so if there's problems, you know, it's my fault and stuff like that. And then I was just like, you know what, I finally figured this out. I don't think there's going to be any problems. So I just, screw it. I'm not going to bother with making this sound.
I just realized, too, I didn't put in that this was your first one. And the other reason I wanted to wait and see if you had any questions, because I wanted to run the test to see how hard it is for someone to learn how to edit stuff using Audacity, which is, you know, one of the things that a lot of musicians don't know how to do that.
Yeah, it was easy.
Good.
I mean, all in all, I mean, it's one of those things, too, I think, where you do it once and... Unless you need to go crazy with something, then it's pretty simple. I had used Final Cut Pro before, though.
Oh, you have?
So maybe, it's been a few years ago, but...
So you at least had a basic knowledge of, like, what elements and tools are supposed to be built into it.
Yeah, and, like, tracks and no, it was pretty simple. Other than, like I said, just being like, well, this doesn't do what I want to do when I try to drag something. It's like, no, I do not want to edit this. I want to drag it. I'm like, oh, there's a drag button. Well, that's useful.
On the podcast that the music podcast that we just put out, did you want to? You themed yours, and you've been doing that a lot lately. So, yeah, did you want to talk about your theme that you got going on here?
Well,
and don't go too long into sports because I'll fall asleep.
Yeah, no, I mean, basically it's like this, it's sort of an inside joke. It's not really, it's only a joke because we're like so into it. Like we like Aidan McGeady, but like we're sort of making fun of ourselves for being so into Aidan McGeady. Like it's this sort of tongue-in-cheek sort of thing.
Who's we? It's not me.
That's true. Thank you. I probably should clarify. You don't know him. My old roommate, Eric Cruz, who goes by Cruz Missile to differentiate from the other Erics in the world.
Okay.
But he used to play on my indoor soccer team. Well, actually, we just started a futsal team. And it's on Wikipedia, so if anybody doesn't know what futsal is, you can just look it
up. I'm raising my hand right now.
Yeah, it's F-U-T-S-A-L. So I'll spare the description of the sport. If you're curious, you can just look it up on Wikipedia.
Right on.
Just to kind of, for anybody that's not listened, maybe I never mentioned this at all. I'm pretty sure I mentioned it to you, but the reason I started wanting to theme them is primarily because I felt like if I didn't, then I would just like be playing like metal and punk all the time. Just be like, you know, downloading what I want and not really sort of trying to branch out. And I'm glad I've done that because I really like that the Isaac Graham song that I played last week on the like war and fighting themed show. I really like that, and that's like a folk song, and I never would have downloaded that. And I probably wouldn't have downloaded as much David Rovix. Now, I knew about Rovix from Rat Hole Radio and Linux Outlaws. But, you know, one of the tracks that I played this week was a Rovix song, St. Patrick Battalion. Yeah, I've really, you know... It's interesting because I think I've sort of gotten into sort of like Celtic music and...
Yeah, you have.
Well, I think the thing is that I used to listen to a lot of folk metal.
Okay.
And there's a lot of sort of like Celtic stuff in folk metal. And so I got to sort of listening to that sort of like interludes would just be like, you know... Not Scandinavian music as well as Celtic music, but some of that, and I just sort of kind of, it sort of got in the rotation, and now I've sort of started listening to it. And out of the Celtic music, I've sort of started listening to, I mean, not very much, but just when I notice when I'm just like trying to pick up new music for the show, that like bluegrass, you know, which is sort of, it's bluegrass kind of came out of Celtic music, you know, like the Appalachian Mountain people and stuff.
Yeah.
And I've noticed sort of kind of being more interested in that as well. So it's just sort of a little progression. But yeah, I don't really have a whole lot more to say about. I mean, obviously I could, but you know, there's show notes on there, and it's the one that was released on November 19th, so on Friday, as we record on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So if people want to just check that out and, you know, see the types of song, but it's mostly, it's the all the songs are in some way related to Ireland, Glasgow, or which is in Scotland, or Russia, and the reasoning behind that is in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
I think going on any longer than that would probably be too much.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't used to I didn't listen to Celtic music very often either, and then maybe a few years back, I don't know if I've mentioned it before on the show or not, but I mean, I was in a band that was sort of a, I guess, sort of a punk Celtic band. I mean, but mainly it was covers. We never wrote our own stuff. We basically played stuff like the Pogues and the Knack, and
so nothing like the Dropkick Murphys.
No, we played Dropkick Murphys as well.
Okay, because I like them. I don't really like the Pogues. They're a little too laid back for me.
Well, the basis of the band was built on the Pogues. I came into it later. I was actually the guy that they came in to have as a singer, because the group that it originally was split into two separate groups, two groups of people in the band, and you know, being a Celtic band, there was like eight people in it, and they went their own way, and one group needed a singer, and the singer went with the other group. So they, the guy that played the whistle in it is actually the horn player in my band, and he's like, well, why don't we have him come do it? And then I came and sang, and we played every Tuesday night for like 4 years. And then I got to tell you, I burnt out on Celtic music. Playing it every week playing it every week. It's especially the same songs and songs that aren't yours. It can become very tiring after a while. But I enjoyed it while we did. And we still get asked every year to do the St. Patrick's Day parade, because the people that run it have no idea that we broke up. So we still, and it's like, you know, they just give us a sum of money to play three songs and ride around on a float for an hour.
So do you guys do it?
Yeah, every year. They keep asking us till they stop asking, and they keep going, where are you playing? And it's like, where aren't we playing? We never give them a straight answer. But so that's always fun. And then cool. I guess to talk about the songs I had, oddly enough, I didn't have anything in my bookmarks this week, so I actually had to seek out songs. Usually I'll be I guess it's just been a busy week at work or something, because I'll just turn on a couple of – or pull up a couple of the websites that have the stuff on it, let it play, you know, find a couple of playlists and just let it go. And then I'll go, oh, I like that one. And then I'll bookmark it. Well, I didn't have anything this time. So I actually just went to, the Free Music Archive and chose a couple of categories. And, after scrolling through a couple, you know, giving it a first listen or whatever, and then, found a couple I liked and pulled them up. So there was really no rhyme nor reason to the one that I did this time. Usually it's inspired by something or something that someone posts that says, hey, you got to check this out. And one thing I'd like to say, too, and I don't know if you do this, but as friends on Jamendo, a lot of them, I just sent out an email like a couple months ago and said, hey, when you find stuff that you like, send it to me. And I get stuff in my email all the time from Jamendo of people going, hey, you might like this, and I'll go check it out. And it's usually pretty half and half, but I find a lot of really cool stuff that way. So that might be something you want to try out as well. Or anybody going on Jamendo. Because you do the whole, you know, find friends on there. And all you have to do is when you find one, there's a way to just recommend it to everybody in your list.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't think I have very many friends on Jamendo. But I just haven't used it as like a social networking site.
Are you like that South Park episode where the one kid on Facebook doesn't have any friends? Have you seen that? You haven't seen it. You have no idea what I'm talking about.
No, I don't.
There's actually a.
It sounds funny.
It is pretty funny. There's this one nerdy kid that doesn't have any friends, and then one of the South Park kids friends him, and he starts taking his computer around as if it's like a friend, and he takes it to movies and will, you know, talk on the wall with him and stuff, and acts like it's a real person. It's funny, and it's actually kind of touching at the same moment, but it's really weird. But everybody starts shunning him because he's friends with the kid that doesn't have any friends, and it goes on and on. But that's what it made me feel like. So for a brief second, I worried about you, Doug, that you don't have any friends.
Yeah, I have plenty of Facebook
friends. Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Just not on Janine. you talking about getting in a Celtic band made me think. One of the bands that I picked, Beltane's Fire, It's the instrumental track, but they do... Actually, I don't know. I don't think they're all instrumental, but MC Lynx is in that band, and he's a rapper.
Oh,
So it's just kind of funny that like this rapper is in a Celtic. I don't know. I think it's funny, but you know, I'm just imagining like 50 Cent being in like a Celtic band or something. Like, does that image not humor you?
I guess not. For some reason, it obviously must not have shocked me. I was like, oh yeah, of course.
Yeah, like with some like a big money, like diamond crusted, like, you know, money symbol chain, and like a,
no,
like
it a, would be a pot of gold chain.
Yeah,
that would be awesome. I would like that. I just thought of that, and that would be super cool.
Yeah, 50 Cent could wear like a green hat and like a leprechaun hat. Man, I should like write him and be like, dude, whenever you get tired of rapping,
you should write him like you guys are like just Celtic fan. Hanging out all the time.
Yeah. 50, sup?
God.
So anyway, yeah. So if people are not either are or aren't interested in Beltane's Fire, I played MC Lynx last week actually, which that was not planned to play him last week and then them this week. But anyway, so there you go. So Steven, who recommended that we talk about our music, let us know what you thought.
Yeah, I mean, I was a little ill-prepared, and I didn't really say much. I only know just, like I said, it was one of those times where I wasn't really seeking out or like going, hey, this band was told me about it. I literally just went and discovered it while I was doing the show.
I don't know if Steven thinks that we have some sort of divine inspiration for these tracks either. Maybe
sometimes I do.
Yeah, well,
like I said, yeah, I mean, I don't. I have people send them to me. Yeah, you don't. Well, but you're theming them.
That's true. So I suppose there could be some inspiration for the theme. Which there was this week, and there was the Halloween theme, which obviously that was inspired by Halloween.
Yeah, and that sucked because then when I went to look for everything, you had already found it.
Dude, you could have asked me because I had a bunch of other Halloween tracks.
Well, I still found some. It was just I had to use kind of a different keyword search than you did.
Yeah,
you know,
there were
some
other things like monsters and stuff like that could have definitely been used.
Well, I used I just went on both, or I went on Free Music Archive and Jamendo, and I think I searched for the word night, and oddly enough, that pulled up pretty much what I was looking for.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was really weird. It like everything was kind of themed the way I want to. I don't know if it was just because that was the time of the year, and for me, everything kind of seems that way during that time of year, but it worked out all right. So there you go. More tips for you.
Cool. Yeah, speaking of tips, we didn't talk about this 100 apps thing, did we, on SoundCloud?
No, I don't think so.
So, there's an article, it was the one I put in there that said, hey, if you don't have something, a how-to for, bands this week, we can use this. Did you have a how-to sort of thing this week?
No, I did not.
Well,
I came unprepared again.
So, well, that's fine. basically, there are a ton of SoundCloud apps, and basically there's 100 or over 100. And so SoundCloud put up a little celebration thing, and they have an app gallery. And
is this new? I feel like I would have known more about the app gallery. This is interesting.
I don't think it's new. I mean, they have over 100, so it seems like it.
Yeah, so it can't be that new.
Yeah, one suspects not. But they have an Android app, and so, you know, if you've got an Android, you can download some stuff. If you're a freedom hater like Tom, then they might have an iPhone app. I don't know.
I would assume they do.
Yes, there's City Sounds.
I mean, I know.
I don't know if what that is exactly, but
I know that the iPhone is a small market share.
Yeah.
Why would they build something for it?
Hey, Android's got more now, I believe.
Yeah, I know.
It's huge, no doubt. Yeah, with CitySounds.fm in your pocket, you have access to all the great music from cities around the world when you're on the subway, driving to work, or waiting for friends.
We are not sponsored by them, but it sounded like we were.
Yeah, I wish we were. So, dear CitySounds.fm, please sponsor us.
There's one app on there that I've used before that I really liked, but I found from time to time that it would just freeze up my computer, and it's the Extension FM app that also, you know, is built into Chrome, or you can, you know, has a Chrome extension.
Yeah.
And it basically, when you go to a page, it's like a music player, and what it does is it goes, oh, there's music on here, and then it just puts it in your library. Now, when I say puts it in your library, it means that it saves it in the memory of the extension FM app, and you can just open it up, and it will find all the stuff, like stuff you didn't even know was on the page. And you can go through and look at all the pages you visited, and it plays it just like it's your music library, it plays it from the links, so you never actually download it. But when you know how you can sync up your extensions in your Chrome browser, so anywhere you go, any site you've ever visited that had music on it is found by, or you can look for it in this Extension FM app as if you downloaded it. It's really cool, but sometimes it just gets so intensive. Like, I've had to disable it a couple of times, but I keep turning it on because it's such a cool thing. And when you play it, it runs it minimized in your toolbar, so you can just leave the page, and it keeps playing because it plays it as if it's a music player. So you don't have to sit there and wait for it to play, or, you know, for the song, and you can just continue browsing, and then you hover over the app button, and the drop down player just shows up, and you can skip to the next song, or you can just stop it, or what. It's a super cool app, but sometimes it gets memory leaks.
I am like totally hooked already.
It's a great app.
There's a Last FM extension. I mean, like, you can Scrabble your stuff. So I'm in.
Oh yeah, built into extension. Yeah.
Yeah, I can. I'm in. So.
Yep.
And
once again, me even talking about it, I want to turn it back on. I disabled it last week because on my netbook, it just kills it. sometimes it doesn't kill it all the time. Like, if I have my app, like it gets a memory leak or something in it sometimes, and it just freezes up the browser. But it's very, very, it doesn't happen often, but enough so where, like, I'll be doing something and listening, and all of a sudden everything will freeze up, and I'll get super pissed and.
Well, not to get too geeky on people, but I thought that Chrome was supposed to have, like, different processes for each tab, and that wasn't supposed to happen.
I guess it's
an extension that it's not a single tab. It's not, like, Flash or something. So, okay, never mind. I convinced myself that that's how it should happen.
Well, and just like I tell people about computers, and when everybody's talking about how great their computer system is or whatever, you know what? They all suck in their own way. All have their same problems. So,
yeah,
you know, and there's no way around it. Nothing's going to be perfect.
Let me read out the description for the SoundCloud iPhone app, the official one. The official SoundCloud app lets you easily access tracks sent to your SoundCloud account while you are on the road, at gigs, in the studio, or just away from your computer. It lets you seamlessly browse and listen to the tracks from people you follow, sent to you from other people, or sent directly to your SoundCloud Dropbox.
You just wanted to do your announcer voice, didn't
you? Yeah, I kind of did. But there is an official iPhone app. So, I mean, I guess the basic sort of upshot here as far as, like, being useful for artists is get your stuff on SoundCloud, because there's all these apps that people can use to access the music on SoundCloud. So,
and being mobile is really, I'm finding more and more, just a complete bonus. Whether it is using my netbook and having it with me to be able to just instantly record or jot something down, or being able to take my phone and record something that needs to be done. There are like multimedia. Oh, that's some. That's a tool I should talk about next time. There are multimedia.
Well, don't talk about
not multimedia. I, well, yeah, I'm just gonna give a hint to it. But like, there's ways to do a teaser. There's a way to do multi-track recording, and I'll talk about what app I've tried a couple of them, and some of them I'm just like, that's not working, and a couple others where it's like, that's pretty cool. There are some that have archive.org baked into it, so you can upload your stuff there.
Speaking of archive.org, I found out that Banshee has archive.org.
Oh, that's right. You were talking about that.
Yeah. I mentioned that on.
I saw you post that.
Status on that. Yeah. So I was super excited about that. So if you're an Ubuntu user and you want to use archive.org with Banshee, you can't use that in Lucid in 10.04. It's broken. Like, it looks like it's gonna work, doesn't work. So either you have to use the PPA, and if you use Ubuntu, you'll know what that means. If you don't, it won't work for you anyway, so don't worry about it. But
so you still use the service version or the supported version?
Well, yes and no. I mean, that's what we use it, like what we support at work.
Okay.
But I have Maverick on several of my machines.
Gotcha.
So
at work it doesn't work for you.
No,
that's funny.
I use the PPA on my main machine at work.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway.
Yeah. So how does it it's built in the same way like Jamendo is and stuff?
Yeah. So, well, that's funny because Jamendo is not actually built into Banshee.
RhythmBox.
But they just they actually just released a Jamendo. Like, it's not in the main build or whatever, but there's like a patch now for Jamendo, and so in the next release there'll be Jamendo support. Which is really bizarre that they didn't have that before now, but whatever.
Yeah, and especially if they're going to be a big competitor, you would think they'd have something like that built into it the way that the default player does, which is RhythmBox.
Yeah,
and what do you think of Banshee? See, because I tried Banshee once and I didn't really care for it as much.
I like it. I mean, you use Amarok, don't you, or not on your netbook?
Not on my netbook, because the Kubuntu version for netbook is still really green. It was cool, but it would crash all the time.
Lucid uses 1.6.1, and Maverick uses 1.8, and so I don't know when you used it, but I mean, you know, if they're putting out two, you know, dot releases in 6 months, then it seems like development's going pretty quickly. Of course, they could put out a new dot release every day, and version numbering is kind of, I won't say worthless, but.
Well, I've tried both Banshee and Amarok, and or not Banshee, Banshee and RhythmBox on Ubuntu, and I still got to say, I mean, it's kind of just two sides of the same unfriendly coin to me, because I'm spoiled by Amarok, which I still think is the best player.
Well, the thing about Banshee is that there is active development, whereas RhythmBox hasn't had anything new for like 2 years or something. I mean, RhythmBox is dead.
Really?
Yeah. So people are just hanging on to it.
Yeah, why would they continue to support it if nobody is doing it? I mean, it's still out of the box, the player that it uses.
Yeah, I don't know. So I I was just on CNET news because I wanted to talk about this Senate panel approves domain name seizure. I don't know if you saw that. But anyway, we'll talk about that in a second, because one of the links on the side, the most popular, is Mystery of Google Street View's Naked Guy in Trunk. And so I clicked on that. And sure enough, there's a picture of Street View, and there's like what looks like, hopefully it's not a dead dog. It's just a dog laying on the ground. But a potentially dead dog and a guy laying in the back of his convertible, potentially naked. You can't really see, or maybe they've got it blurred out here. But otherwise, he could like have underwear on or something. But yeah, there's definitely a dude without pants. Maybe skimpy shorts, but without pants, like long pants, and without a shirt. In the trunk of a car. Like, why is this man in the trunk of a car?
And why is the casting crew or the film crew for Cops not arresting him?
yeah.
Because isn't that set up right there is like every episode of the show Cops. Why are you not wearing clothes, sir? What? Wife kicked me out. Nice. Yeah, why wouldn't he be sleeping in a trunk, Doug? He's naked. He needs to cover up.
Yeah. Well, it's an open trunk, so, I mean, you know. It's not
he
like
needed some air. Man's got to breathe. Now, there's a site that has a bunch of really weird Street View photos. I saw another one. There's one that actually people in England were protesting because they found a Street View, and they made them take it down. It was a Street View of, I don't know, a Christmas party or something, and it's a picture of a guy throwing up outside of a bar. So, and he's, and his friend's like standing next to him, like doing the patting on his back, like, you're going to be all right, buddy. And he's wearing, it's like this 7 or 6 foot tall guy, standing next to him, you know, patting him on the back, totally head shaved. You know, he looks like a total, rude boy, and he's wearing, fuzzy antlers, like novelty fuzzy antlers. 'Cause it was a Christmas party or something. And the other dude's just sitting there like hunched over, like throwing up. And like it, the picture's like in mid puke, like it's coming out of his mouth onto
nice,
the floor.
Nice.
Yeah. And apparently, they ended up removing it.
So this is in Germany. So, you know, Germans, what you going to do?
See, I would not have thought that. I thought we would have gone back to the Appalachian conversation you were talking about before.
With naked people in trunks?
Yeah, and a dog laying in front of him. I mean, maybe it could have actually been his home. Or that's where he sleeps when the wife, you know, makes him leave the room. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's a convertible. It looks kind of nice.
Ooh, fancy.
I don't know. Yeah, I know. And there's also a, apparently, it says, Germany is not like Brazil, where Street View seemed to unearth more dead bodies on sidewalks than can be seen in the whole repertoire of Law and Order.
Goodness.
Yeah, what? That sounds sketchy.
Yeah.
But anyway, this one just unearthed what really looks like a dead dog. I'm going to assume it's not a dead dog, but here, I'll just send you this link. I'm sitting here talking about it.
I'm assuming he's sleeping. Come on.
Yeah, but
like
dude,
90% of what dogs do.
Yeah, he looks dead, though. He looks like all, I don't know, he looks stiff. I don't know. But anyway, I got to this this distraction from a Senate panel approves domain name seizure bill. So basically,
oh, I read about that.
Yeah. So basically, my only, I didn't want to talk too much about it. I mean, unless you have a lot to say about it, but I'm just like, well, if you use Creative Commons and, you know, listen to Creative Commons, then you don't have to worry about this.
So what you're talking about is the fact that they deemed it. Basically, they could shut down any site that they think the core of what they do is share illegal stuff. Illegally obtained movies, music, and all kinds of things like that. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, I
read about that, and that's nuts because it's nuts, and it also has a very kind of, I find that interesting sort of thing in it. So what's nuts about it is one of the sites that they could shut down is Dropbox. Because the entire concept of Dropbox is sharing files with other people that you can't access.
But
I know, but that's one of the main things that was brought up in the article. And another one was, you know, the obvious ones like MediaShare and, you know, RapidShare and, you know, all those ones where you go to a page that has like 85 ads on it and whatever. But like Dropbox was one, and I was just like, but it fits into the category of what they're saying. And it's like, how did this get by? But the one thing I wanted to point out was that I noticed one of the sites they didn't talk about was YouTube. I find half of the stuff that I'm looking for on YouTube. If I want to see a movie that it wasn't out, I find it on YouTube. If I'm looking for a show that's not put on Hulu, I find it on YouTube. But it's not brought up because Google owns it. Is my thinking on it, or, you know, my conspiracy theory of the day on that one. So, but that's a huge thing. I mean, it seems like it's something that would be more like, oh, we're going to shut down the BitTorrent people. And that's not it at all. They can shut down anything that they deem that way. So hopefully it's supposed to go up against, so it passed, but it's supposed to go up against committee for approval, which I don't know how the hell law works. That doesn't make sense to me. It like, if it passed, it passed, right? But
well, this
it looks
is
like
just
there's
a panel. This is a Senate panel.
Right.
So that wasn't like the Senate.
Okay. So it still has one more thing to go through. But I mean, it went through one, which if I remember correctly, most of the time there are things that that's happened to where it never makes it after that. So it, I'm And there are actually people that are against it who normally wouldn't be against it because of the misuse of it, or yeah. what could potentially be the misuse of it. And the, right. the bill itself, they say, is written completely open-ended. It's not specific
well, you know,
whatsoever.
90%, if not more, of those guys don't know a damn thing about the internet.
Right.
You know, I mean, my grandfather is older than most of the people in the Senate, I would imagine. But I was trying to help him with his computer the other day, and it was just, well, I mean, I've tried doing it over email, and that was terrible. And so I called him, but he can't hear. How am I supposed to give him instructions over the over the telephone if he can't hear?
Right.
Like, I don't know. And
then it just sounds like you're yelling at him. And
yeah. And I was like, at one point, I was like, you know how to use a typewriter, right? You're just typing the letters that I'm telling you to type. That's all.
Funny.
And I don't, it was just, it's like it's like as soon as the keys are attached to a monitor that it's like speaking Russian to him or something. I don't know.
That's a good point. Like they think there's some other kind of magic involved after that happens.
Yeah.
And I don't mean just grandparents. I mean when you're trying to explain things to technically inclined or not technically inclined people in
right.
general.
This is changing the subject back to the article. Mm-hmm. But one of the interesting things about this is that if you know the IP address of the site, mm-hmm. then taking the domain name away doesn't do anything. So basically what's going to happen is people are just going to post the IP addresses and people are just going to use the IP addresses.
The way the internet used to be. Like
yeah,
when it first started.
This is yet again proof. I mean, I guess they're making it harder for people to do this by not being to remember thepiratebay.org. But, you know, we have computers. You know, you can put in an Excel file or, you know, spreadsheet of your choice file, mm-hmm. you know, this, you know, string of octets equals this domain name. You can do that. Anyway, so the Senate is doing stupid crap. Use Creative Commons.
Yeah, so we'll see how that plays out.
I also wanted to talk about the this Free Software Magazine article. Artists should be paid, part one, why creator endorsed sales promote fair sharing. Since we talked about this at length, and I'm just going to send you the link. I don't know if you were on the DECO site, but that's the one. Since we talked about this in length last week, I just thought that it was really cool that, you know, it was prescient that that article came out on the 15th, which was literally the day after we recorded that last show. Mm-hmm. Maybe the Free Software Magazine has our shows, like our Skype tapped. And so they were like, we are totally going to scoop them because it'll take them a week to get this out. We'll have it out there before then. I don't really know. But it was kind of creepy, actually, that they had this out there.
Yeah.
But,
I'm trying to pull up the page. Really, the page is still loading. We go. Okay, now I got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, making movies. I see what you're talking about.
Yeah, so they got a little picture down there. I know. I think we both like pictures.
Yes.
The under the proprietary approach or the gambler model. So...
Yeah, and once again, another questioncopyright.org article. So that site must be getting around because that's essentially what sparked the whole conversation that we were having was something that I was looking at on there. I like the graphs. I'm trying to, and it's the whole artist endorsement model that we had spoken of. It looks like they're showing in there to show the, you know, what the artist actually gets paid from the viewer and what the publisher gets before the artist, et cetera, and showing if you buy this, kind of giving them an incentive to go, hey, the publisher is putting this out on DVD, but if you buy this other thing, I get more pay for that. And this is actually the thing that I'm putting out, and the publisher is kind of getting more of the incentive for the other thing that they put out, which is, I think, a good thing to put out. Whereas if you're going to buy the DVD anyway, or if you have a DVD, I'm still using the same conversation we had last week. But if you see a DVD and you're going to buy it anyway, and you see that the artist only gets like maybe $2 from that $25 DVD, but you see from the album they get 75%, you may go, well, I'm going to buy both, or I'm going to buy the other. Or you may just buy the one knowing, like, well, they're getting something, I guess. But it's just one of those things that it's good to know. Kind of like when they put, you know, smoking, you know, is bad for your health on cigarettes. It's like, thank you. I did know that, but I'm good. I'm going to do it anyway. So,
yeah, but some people aren't as worldly as you are, Tom.
Worldly.
Might be, oh God, I'm going to die.
You know, what I like is in Canada, they actually just put a skull and crossbones and say smoking will kill you on the packages. And I think that's awesome.
Nice.
I mean, and I'm not against smoking. I'm actually an occasional smoker myself. And, you know, when I saw that, I was just like, that's brilliant. Why would you fight that? Everybody knows it. Nobody's like going, I don't know. This tobacco companies say that it's fine, so I'm going to believe them, you know. But anyway, yeah, that's kind of like what this is, whereas you're just saying, putting on there, the publisher gets what?
I don't know. They might be like, hippies, don't take away my cigarettes.
Maybe.
I trust you, Marlboro. Look at that sexy cowboy riding a horse.
I like the fact that you have a voice with this.
Yeah. I have a voice for everything, Bob.
Yeah, so the article, I mean, at the end, it wraps it up by saying the fans are the boss, because the upshot is if you want, you can have the fans serve you the way, or, you know, help you out the way that they really want to support you in. And I think that's really cool. And that does suck we were scooped on that story. But you know what? At least it's getting out there to more people.
Well, this is part one, though. So
there's
maybe
more
we'll
to come.
Talk about things. Maybe we'll talk about things last week when that show comes out that they haven't talked about before their part two comes
out. We should
out.
Encrypt our conversations. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's because we're on an open Skype line.
But Skype is encrypted.
I suppose so. I don't know. I seem to recall that like years back, and then everybody said, I don't care. It works, right? Okay, good.
Well, the problem is I think all the uproar is that it is or used to be like a sort of torrent-like system where it used other people's Skype to like go through. But the traffic itself, I'm pretty sure, was encrypted.
Okay. I do remember when it first came out that they said it was encrypted, and I was like, well, that's good, and that's about the extent of what I knew about it.
Yeah, but I think the uproar is because they use some sort of, like, you know, to get the bandwidth that's needed, they do some sort of shim-shammery with it.
Shim-shammery and skullduggery.
Yeah, exactly.
Karn Sornet.
So, yeah, I'll have to keep my eyes out on that.
And you go to Free Software Magazine more than I do. I go there occasionally.
Well, I get their RSS feed.
So do I, but I've got like 1,000 RSS feeds, so I just do the top story ones.
I actually like at least a glance at the headlines of all of my RSS feeds, which most people don't do that. But I am like anal retentive, and if I'm not gonna read it, I will like mark it as read. I'm the same way with
anything. I was just gonna ask if you're one of those guys.
Yeah, I do the same.
Like mine still says that I think I have like over like thousands and thousands of unread stories from like a couple of years.
Yeah, I can't handle it. It's like my
It's driving you nuts right now even thinking about
it's
it.
It's like
isn't
my
it?
Puritan background just says that I'm being lazy if I don't read them all or something. I don't know.
See, I use Feedly now, so I don't have to pay attention to that. The Feedly extension, it takes your Google Reader and displays it on a web page that looks like a magazine website. That's an extension for Chrome, and I use that now, and it hooks right into your, you know, you can favorite and bookmark and.
I'm not sure how that helps me. How does that help me?
Because then you won't have to look and see all the unread content. You'll just see it as like a web page that you visit every day.
I won't know that it's there.
Right.
But I'll kind of feel like, what am I missing? What's on the next page?
I suppose. But that's what I'm saying is I do it that way. And oddly enough, and I know that you don't really use Twitter anymore, but one of the things that I get most of my top stories from, because reading through Twitter itself is just mind-numbing, but there's the website Paperly, which is paper.li, and you put in your you know, your Twitter name in it, and it creates a like a newspaper sort of thing based, you know, once a day, or you can do it twice a day. You can tell it when to update, and it finds all the sites that actually, or all the people that posted links or pictures or, you know, things like that, and displays it to you like a newspaper.
That's pretty sweet.
it's actually really cool. So I rarely read my Twitter feed anymore. And I do that, and I'll go there, and I'll find, like, what's the top thing people are posting today. And it only updates once a day. It's not like Twitter where it's just like, okay, stuff keeps coming. And this is the really weird thing. It separates it into categories. I don't know how it does it, but it does it by, like, arts and entertainment, news, business. Like, I don't know how the hell it does that, but it's usually pretty spot on. It even
they
has, like, politics.
Just look at the like, URL would be my guess.
I suppose.
Or maybe it uses hashtags. I don't know.
But
so
it, but
I see
what's...
some of these have hashtags, like hash.
Some of them do.
Hash
it has job. It has hashtag sections.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's people that are posting stuff. And what's great about it is that it will show who posted it, but it shows you like a synopsis of the story, or like the first couple of lines of the story, instead of like the, hey, I found this link, check it out. It actually shows you like what you're going to read. So you can click on it to read more, or you can just kind of look at the couple of lines of what the page has and go, oh, I don't care about that. Or it shows you the headline instead of, but you can hover over the person's picture and it will show you what that person posted when they posted it. And that's actually the funny part, because you'll see like this really interesting story, and then you hover over how they posted it, and it's like, wow, that's stupid, and then a link, you know, or something like that, like the inane Twitter chatter that they actually used to post it, and then this thing lays it out like a nice little newspaper. So anyway, I digress. I don't remember how we got into that.
Huh. So breaking news.
Yeah.
There's another article on Free Software Magazine called Confusion and Complexity, High Time to Prune Creative Commons Licenses. Now, I totally disagree with that statement, because I think there should be more Creative Commons licenses.
But, really?
Yeah, because there's... Have you listened to the Gray Area podcast at all? The guy from...
It sounds familiar, but I don't think it's anything I've listened to recently.
The guy who's doing the free music archive, Jason...
I have listened. I was going to – I just recently started listening to that.
Well, I mean, it's only been around for a month, so.
Oh, okay. Well, then I guess I'm on board. Like, I've heard two shows, and they must not have that many after that. Okay.
No, they – he interviewed a guy from Creative Commons on the show, and the guy there was very adamant that non-commercial means non-commercial, like that it's very clear – that if you're selling anything, you're violating the non-commercial license.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the way that Headphonica got around that is they explicitly state on their website that for DJ performances, you know, for like live shows and stuff, it's fine. Like they use non-commercial, but they're saying for live DJ performances, don't worry about that. But, you know, they're having to... But if somebody just, you know, downloads their songs, you know, what if somebody puts them on archive.org or puts them on the torrent, puts them somewhere where Headphonica is not controlling how that it's being perceived. You know,
right.
all that person's doing is putting the Creative Commons license on there. You know, then they don't know that. Now, I don't know how, you know, I don't know how the Creative Commons is about, you know, modifying their licenses. You know, like, could they just... Well, I mean, I guess it wouldn't be a Creative Commons license anymore. I mean, they could... I mean, basically what I'm saying, if they use a non-commercial share-alike, then they're not sharing that notice as far as the... about live DJ shows. They're only sharing the content of the... I mean, basically what they're doing is they're dual licensing it. They're licensing it as Creative Commons, and then they're licensing it as... And then they're licensing it to DJs as BYSA. That's essentially what they're doing. But I mean, that's a problem, because there's a lot of people, you know, and I used to be in this camp as well, that are kind of like, you know, I don't want people ripping me off, you know. And then there's the argument of like, well, if they want to use it for something, they should just ask me. But the fact of the matter is that most people that are getting Creative Commons content are not, they're just looking at the license. You know, there are those check boxes on Jamendo that's in Free Music Archive, and probably on a lot of other sites, Flickr, for instance, that say, I can use this for commercial purposes.
Right.
You know, and the stuff that doesn't show up on that search, people are just never going to find. You know, the people that want to use it commercially are just never going to find it. So if there was, you know, free to use for a nonprofit or something, you know, if there was another license to sort of take care. I mean, it's not ambiguous, but it's a pain in the ass.
I see what you're getting at.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
So, you know, so if there was a...
Kind of like the same way that there's tax rights for churches as opposed to standard citizens, or different states have essential items taxes removed as opposed to, you know, just frivolous taxes added to things.
Right,
like exactly. if it's something that you absolutely have to have to live, they don't tax you for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, things like that. Okay, I get what you're going with now.
Yeah, and so if there was some sort of, like, you know, they have the sampling and the sampling plus, which I think that goes into... That's a step in that direction. And I guess it can be confusing for people that are not familiar. I mean, and that's sort of the sort of problem, I guess, that people are trying to address is that, you know. But I think the problem over the non-commercial license is not that people don't know what non-commercial means. The problem is that it doesn't make sense to people. It's not the way people want to share.
Right.
So they're trying to sort of mold that into what they want. But what they want doesn't exist unless they dual license something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's clear that people want that, you know. And it may be confusing to first-time people, but I think that if there was some... If there was another license that sort of did what people wanted, then I think that would actually eliminate the confusion.
Well, you know, and the battle is, too, is that the whole concept of what they're doing on creativecommons.org is they're trying to take out the legal ease and make it simple. So I think the one hurdle that they may run into is that making more and more and more and more license, all of a sudden you're going through stuff and you're having to read more. Whereas the way it started out is it had like the three.
Yeah. You know?
So I think that's the one hurdle they have to go through too, or maybe they should actually just add more amendments to the ones that they have existing, because all of a sudden then it does start. But maybe that's the, you know, inevitable necessary evil, is that with the stuff you're talking about, over time, as more people use it, straight out of the box isn't going to be good for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there should be sort of like two classes of Creative Commons works. Mm-hmm. Like sort of like consumer licenses and then sort of creator licenses. And not that they would be like juxtaposed, but maybe that if you were sort of that you would give artists the opportunity to, I guess probably the way to do it would be to dual license it. Mm-hmm. So you could give it like a no derivs license or a non-commercial license, but you could also give it one of these less, we'll just call them less popular, one of these less popular licenses that are sort of a more insider sort of license. Mm-hmm. So for like Headphonica, maybe that there could be like a CC, you know, a non-commercial license that is sort of their billboard license, but then they could also have a CC live. And so the people that only know, you know, attribution share alike or non-commercial, those people aren't going to be able to, they're not going to know that they can use it. Mm-hmm. But that's fine, because that's already the way the system is. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't lose anything by this system. But if there was also this more granular license that says, you know, if you're a DJ or if you're a remix artist, basically if you're an artist and not an advertiser or something like that. I mean, you could think of all sorts of examples, but, you know, then there's this other license for people that are sort of in the know, get a little more rights.
Maybe they should also broaden their checklist that you go through when you're doing this stuff. Because right now it's a couple of check marks and fill out the information.
I think the thing is, though, is that there can't be any more check marks. I mean, those check marks, the licenses for those additional check marks don't exist.
Yeah.
You know, but no, I mean, exactly. I totally agree. But what I'm saying is that if they want to eliminate the confusion, what they can do is sort of have this, like I said, basic license.
Yeah.
And then sort of a more, I'm trying to think of an example where this, I mean, it's sort of a fine print sort of thing, I guess, you know, like, I don't know. I'll have to think about it. Okay. You know, I just glanced at this article. I'm going to read it, but I just,
it's a good point though. And oddly enough, it kind of ties into the last thing that I want to talk about today.
Okay.
Which is that comic that we didn't go over last time, which I did read.
Cool. Well, you didn't have to read much because it was a comic.
I know. And I love reading comics. The link that you sent me to Intellectual Property is Not Theft, the comic.
Yeah.
Which is a guy standing in a room kind of doing what you're doing, explaining how it works, and then the, you know, the room of stuff of people asking questions like, why would I do this? That's why, you know, and then he makes an example and they're like, well, of course that's what we'd want to do. And the guy kind of goes, that's why we're doing it this way. And it's like, oh, but then they ask more questions and he kind of explains. And of course there's humor thrown in and he still doesn't quite get his point across. Like they only catch a couple of points that he makes, not the entire thing. They make fun of hipsters. And Shrek,
always important to make fun of hipsters.
And I love the fact that a lot of the stuff that I've read about Creative Commons and intellectual property, etc., is they always bring up the point that Disney, one of the harshest people about copyright laws, has all their stuff taken, or you know, all their classic stories are from the public domain. And yeah. I love that that's always brought up, but you know, it's after a while when you read a lot of this stuff, it's like, I already know that, so it's like, whatever. But I guess it's not like whatever, but it's like, you know, it doesn't. Some people, that's a surprising thing for them, and other people, it's not.
Yeah, one of the things that reasons I wanted to talk about this is because this is something that mostly with, I guess, like free software, but mm-hmm. one of the things that I've always tried to like get across when I've worked, you know, like, when I've talked to like the people at the Madison Info Shop, and info shops are kind of a lot of places. But for people that don't know where, I mean, like there was one in Chapel Hill, but for people that don't know what info shops are, they're kind of like anarchist libraries or.
Which this comic anarchist. Is very much like the anarchist cookbook and all that kind of stuff that I remember back in the day. Very, very crudely drawn and photocopied and.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I was just trying to explain, like, you know, you guys should really be, you know, like, the, you know, like, there's all these, like, anarchist punk bands, or at least punk bands that claim to be anarchists.
Are there still today? Because I know there used to be. And I don't want to say back in my day, but it is my birthday, and I am getting older, so I can say back in my day.
Do you have your cane? Or are you like shaking it?
I'm sitting down right now. I don't need my cane. I'm just shaking my fist in the air.
Have it at your okay.
Well, yeah, in case I need to get up and use the toilet. Lawn?
Yeah. I forgot what I was gonna say.
You're talking about anarchist punk bands.
Yeah. Oh, there's that Grog and Sorga or whatever. I'm not exactly sure. I can never remember how to spell their name.
Yeah, but, I was just gonna say. Did you just gargle?
They've got that funny looking A. They're on Jamendo.
Okay.
I've played them on the show before.
So there are existing anarchist bands. Yeah, I think actually I remember it now that you say you played on the show. I remember what you're talking about because I remember being surprised by that. That I was like, oh, look at that circle A. Look at that. You don't see it anymore.
And then there's Anti-Flag. Who is like on it now? I guess they sort of have gone the Rage Against the Machine sort of route and said.
You mean Chris Cornell sang for him for a bit?
No.
Ta-dum-bum.
That's not exactly what I mean. But
sorry.
Maybe they will after their lead singer leaves their band. Actually, they did have somebody leave their band a long time ago, like 15 years ago. There's some strife there, but. Anyway, you know, what I'm talking about is where, you know, they were, I don't know if they would consider themselves anarchists or Marxists or what Rage Against the Machine would, you know, but they were against capitalism in some way. Mm-hmm. Of course, they were on, like, Sony or whatever, one of the, you know, behemoths
right.
of capitalism.
And still got to pay the bills.
Well, and they were like, you know, they want their message to get out there, and so, you know, that was the best way for them to get their message out, you know, 20 years ago, and it's hard to argue with that. Mm-hmm. 20 years ago, that being on a major record label, more people got to hear their music, and I think that's pretty much where Anti-Flag has gone with it. The only thing about Anti-Flag is that their music has started to suck.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Rage Against the Machine's music didn't suck until they got Chris Cornell to be there.
Well, at least they changed the name. Singer.
Yes, thank God. That would have been.
Aren't they back together again now too?
Yeah, they've played some shows. I don't know if they've released an album.
Yeah, I was going to just ask you that.
Shows. Yeah, no.
So they finally came to terms with their political disagreement that broke up the band. That's what I heard. I seriously heard that the reason that the singer left the band was because of a political disagreement with the guitar player.
I thought that it was because that Zach didn't want a manager.
Maybe that's the type of politics they were talking about. I thought it had something to do with, like, because it was during the elections. It was during the Bush elections. And I want to say that I heard that they broke up because of a political disagreement in the band. But maybe it had to do with politics in the band. I don't know.
Now, he put out, like, a rap album or something.
Oh, did he? Truthfully, I thought he was the weakest link in that whole band. Sorry.
Who's that?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, I liked it.
Yeah, I don't know. He's like a one-trick pony for me. It's like the band 311, where it's like, okay, you're going to have the one dude that raps, and then you're going to have the one guy that can sing, and then that's going to be what you do. You know, whereas Chris Cornell, they brought him in, great singer, but problem is he made them all wussy-like. Like, the music all of a sudden was, like, boring.
Well, that's the thing that Zach De La Rocha is not, like, the world's greatest vocalist or anything.
Right, but I mean, he kind of does the same thing every time, is what I'm talking about. Like, he doesn't mix it up. I don't know. Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Well, next week, I'll have to find out why they broke up.
Yeah, do that, because I seriously think that I heard that it was because of political disagreement, and it was around the time that, like, Bush was running for president the first time, I think.
Well, it says, okay, I'm on Wikipedia, it says, in October 2000, De La Rocha left Rage Against Sin due to creative differences. Hmm. That's what this
is. See, I didn't hear creative.
Well, that's what Wikipedia said, and Wikipedia is never wrong. So,
you made a funny.
It says, however, it became clear later on that the band disagreed significantly over the release of Renegades, an album of cover versions of songs by artists such as Bob Dylan, etc., etc. The album was never intended for release, and only a select few of the tracks from the sessions were supposed to accompany what would become Live at Grand Olympic Auditorium. However, Wilk Morello and Comerford decided to release the entire covers collection as an album against De La Rocha's wishes.
I'd never even heard of that. Did that actually came out?
Oh, Renegades? Yeah, some of the stuff's really good.
Oh, I'd never heard it. Interesting.
The Ghost of Tom Joad is on there. That's a really good one. Beautiful World. If you want to hear Zach do something different, Beautiful World is very, very different.
Hmm.
Renegades of Funk is good. Also different, maybe not different from Zach as much, as just the song is very different. Kick Out the Jams is good.
Oh, everybody does Kick Out the Jams.
In My Eyes, the Minor Threat song, that is totally badass on that album.
That song's good to begin with.
Yeah, well, yeah. And then they've got, like, they've got Street Fighting Man and Maggie's Farm.
See, I've never heard this album, because my only knowledge of them is when I think Rage Against the Machine, I just think bow wow, chicka bow wow, chicka 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 bow wow. You know.
Well, that was one song out of, like, four albums.
No, I know, but, like, I've heard a lot of other stuff by theirs, and that it all seemed very similar. But this album, yeah. I was unaware of this album, but I wasn't a heavy follower of them. I mean, I didn't mind that song. I'm just saying, when I heard, like, different songs by them, they all tended to sound very similar. Because
they have some other ones. There's one track off the cell. I think it's track four, off the first album. Mm. It's a self-titled album.
See, my knowledge of it was, back then I was in a metal band. And my guitar player basically freaked out on the guitar player in that band, and the fact that his guitar, like, just, he had all kinds of different notes and sounds and everything that came out, like, you know, was, he freaked out about that, which ironically was funny because he never wanted to try anything new and he had one guitar sound. So I always thought that was really funny that he, like, yeah, he dug that so much, but like, that's one of the reasons I left that band is because he never wanted to try anything new.
Oh, one of my favorite Rage songs, I'm looking at this thing still, was No Shelter. Have you heard that one?
Or I truthfully wouldn't know off the top of my head because I don't know any of the song titles.
That's a good one. I think that might have been the one off the Godzilla soundtrack.
Oh,
I don't think it was
Godzilla
on any of the albums.
I remember the Godzilla movie. Oh, disaster.
Have you listened to the we should probably close it up.
Yeah, we're just going to talk about Rage Against the Machine.
but speaking of the Godzilla album, there's a, oh man, I don't remember which, it's the song, the Green Day song where they're like, that's the point of delirium. Well, that's the point of delirium is one of the.
I like that you tried to sing it though, like you were serenading me.
I'm really bad about like being able, like I can, you know, get a pitch if I've heard the song, but I'm really bad about being able to pick a song out of thin air and just sing the. But anyway, I don't remember what the name of the song is. I'm pretty sure it's off the Geek-Steak Breath album. Mm. It's definitely not off the first one. But anyway, that doesn't matter.
All I remember from the Godzilla movie is the slogan was, size does matter. And then after the movie came out, everybody kept posting, plot does matter.
Because
there was no purpose for that movie whatsoever. Which is funny because it was based on a thing where it was Godzilla showed up, crashed through some stuff, then they'd somehow get rid of him with children that hung out with scientists for some reason, and then it was the end of the movie. So I find it funny that everybody had huge expectations for that when the thing it was based on was nutty to begin with.
But what I was going to say is in that version of the song, the Godzilla soundtrack song, they have like a screaming Godzilla in the song.
Oh, God.
And you know, that came out when I was like in high school. Maybe it's older than that. God, I don't know. Godzilla.
No, it's probably when you were in high school because it actually played at my wife's theater and I was like maybe 25 at the time, 24.
Yeah, not 1998. So I would have been a depending on what time of the year, I guess a sophomore. Okay. A sophomore or freshman. But anyway, it was May 1998.
Hmm.
But I can't think that hard. So but I just thought, and I still do, I guess, because like I just have the, like, you know, like your first impression is the impression that sort of sticks with
right.
you. It's either that or it's like you have the total opposite opinion, one or the other. You like form something and then when you get older you're like, God, I was a stupid kid. Or either it's nostalgic, but now I hear that and I'm like, oh man, yeah, this is the sweet Godzilla version.
God.
But I was in like high school and I guess I thought Godzilla noises were the coolest thing in the world, which to be honest they are kind of the coolest thing in the world.
That Godzilla roar is pretty cool.
Yeah, not to be used in every song.
No.
But used sparingly, quite
not to be used as a drum trigger sound.
So anyway, that's your daily dose of Rage Against the Machine and Godzilla.
And it's also
thanks for joining to the Godzilla podcast.
Yeah, and it's also the end of this week's podcast. Thank you very much for joining us at Music Manumit, the Music Manumit podcast at musicmanumit.com. I said Music Manumit a lot. I'm Tom, and you're Doug.
I am.
And we'll see you next time.
Thank you.